Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
All right. You've got us back. We're the Ages of Rock podcast. We're all three here. And we have two guests with us.
Welcome to the Brent and John show, where we have brought on our three favorite podcasters to talk about the world of podcasting.
But see what I tell you, Bill.
It starts. It starts already.
We crank.
That's the best part of the. That's these are the best ones to do.
And then we have, of course, we have with us Brent Arns.
That's a weird name to pronounce. Yeah.
Is it? But did I get it right? Is it Arns?
Yeah,
half my. I'm gonna say because some people go. It's, right.
It's borderline. It makes no sense. Arns. That's not even a word.
There you go. Okay. And then John Mikowski. Is I get right it? Did I get that right?
Close. That's okay. I'll take it. Mikowski. I've been called much worse things.
That's not even a word either.
All right, but the reason we have these two gentlemen on, I could say gentlemen, but we'll talk about that here in a little bit, is because of this. Bill? Flip. There you go. Come on, Bryn.
Hey, Bryn, do you have a book?
He's a Haagen-Dazs.
It's better.
All right, so anyway, there is a book that has just came out, and it's actually available now, I believe. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And it's called Flip. Thanks for having us. And it is the story behind the little band that almost could. and what a great book this is. I want to tell you real quick before we get started. Like I said, we've had Brent on here. Oh, this is his third time. And I've actually met him in person in Nashville.
I just keep my Zoom on all the time. And whenever they check in, I'm just good to go.
But Bryn is not infected, but he's infectious. He is a very funny person and great to be around. And the funny thing is, reading this book, every time it gets to a point where it is Bryn, you know, you're talking to him, I hear Bryn's voice.
I did the same thing.
And it's fucking hilarious because some of the stories you've actually told on the show. But every time I hear this is a quote from Bryn, I hear your voice, and I start laughing.
Bryn, just so you know, Dennis hears a lot of voices. It's kind of weird, but
yeah, I do. Especially when it's Bryn's.
We got
voice.
Him out. We got him out today for a while, for about two hours. So you got about
there you go.
You know, 35 minutes to an hour with you, and then you got to take him back.
If you see the suits coming in to take me out, we're okay.
It's okay to hear Bryn's voice, but what is his voice telling you? That's where the concern is.
No, I'm hearing hearing him breathe the words.
You know, but that's anyway. Funny you say that. You're not the first person to say that about the way John had written the book, that as you read it, the different people that are being interviewed, you know, at the different points in the book, that it's very voiced, like you hear the people. You know, I just made that word up, voiced, but I think it makes sense.
I did. It was part of the plan that, you know, I was doing all the interviews by Zoom meets. And so the following day, I'd listen to them all and transcribe them word for word. And I wanted it to be in the band members' voice, not just Bryn, but all the band members, sound techs, you know, the stage crew. The guiding principle for me was, how would the fans like to hear this? And I always think, you know, when they had that A&E show, the Kiss, you know, documentary that came out last year.
So we called both of them and asked them.
That's right. Both fans. But no, you know, we watched that A&E documentary about Kiss. I think most people's favorite section was the section with Gene and Paul sitting around a living room with Paul's feet up on the couch. And I wanted this book for the fans to be what it'd be like to sit around the fireplace with all the members of Flip just telling it to you in their own words. And so, you know, I feel like I achieved that. And people who know the band members say they hear each person's voice individually. So I'm pleased about that.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, I like the way that as you're going through it, kind of you segue. You got the little bit of a story, then here comes an album. You talk about it, then you go into detail with this. Then the story continues. Then something else, and then okay, let's talk about each member. You do this part. I like the way the book's set up. It keeps you going. What's going to go next? You know, and here's the way it goes. And yeah, I liked it a lot.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I have written. I'm a science teacher who in the summer travels to tropical countries in search of undiscovered species of insects. And I've written a couple identification manuals, but I've also kept journals, and I've published, I guess, four nonfiction, like my travel memoirs about the adventures that happen when I'm in Thailand and an elephant steps into the river next to me, or, you know, a gibbon steals a hat off my friend while he's doing some work. And so I already had developed a narrative style. And when I decided to pick up this topic, when I finished one book, I got to think of what's the next one I'm going to do. And I realized I had read lots of rock bios, all the Kiss bios, the Van Halen bios, there's Cheap Trick bio out there. And I had fallen in love with this band. And I just decided, you know, this is a band with a story. And so I texted Bryn on his Facebook page and said, I want to write the book. And he texted back, what book? And then his second text was his phone number. So I called him, and I think Bryn will agree with me. By the end of a 40-minute conversation, we were connecting so well. We felt like we'd known each other much longer. And we just started doing Zoom meets, and then Bryn started telling the other guys, yeah, this guy's on a level, let's go with it. And it was a very organic process. And I think that comes through in the way it the final product sounds that way.
Yeah, that was going to be the question I asked, because I was looking through the front whenever I got the book, and I'm like, oh, what other biographies has he done? And I'm reading through it, and I'm like, oh, none. And I'm like, and either you know Bryn, and so you know it's going to be a wild ride, or why did you pick them? And so that was going to be my first question. So you already answered it, but that's not something I think you would normally see occur, right? It's you know, in your previous writings, I think somebody to go, oh, I'm going to pick up John's next book, and you pick this up, and you go, well, that is not about insects and stuff like that.
But they have been known.
No, it is about a buzz. There is a lot about buzz.
They have been known to bug a lot of people.
Well, you know what? One of my, I think any author that lists their other stuff, I think the hope is if they like the one book, they'll look at that list. And I'm kind of looking forward to people, if I don't want to presume, but if people like this book, they'll open it and say, backpacking across New Guinea. What is that? I liked this book. Maybe I like that book. It's not rock and roll. It's not anything, but, you know, why not? Some of my favorite authors into for one reason, and now I like them for another reason, you know, so that can happen.
So in the book selling thing, there's like, if you like dragonflies, you might like Flip.
Exactly.
I thought I had heard everything. You know, I've been in band since I was in high school. The term dirty dicked a microphone.
Oh my God. Okay.
That's your one note, Dennis, that you wrote?
Dirty dicked.
I didn't know it either. I had to have it explained to me.
That's terrible.
It's going to have to be broadcast after dark.
We'll put our explicit lyrics.
You kicked a microphone, a steering wheel, drumsticks. That happened.
Yeah.
I'm super proud.
I hope
it's Stevie. What is that story? Which one is the microphone?
Stevens.
Stevens. Yeah.
I was sitting there at work. I was finishing it out. And I was like, going, can I borrow a pen? I got to write this down. Yep. So I don't forget.
In the early 80s, we did a show with Bad English. And it's really an old fashioned trick for the headliner to eat up all the time with their sound check, so the opening act is as you know, screwed over as they possibly, they're, well, basically, so they're no threat to the headliner. And they did that to us. So I walked behind the drum set after our, just barely had time to even plug our guitar cables. And I walked back around this way. His sticks were still on the snare drum, and they may or may not have fallen down the crack of my butt.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
I'm sure there's lots of stories about that with bands, right? Oh, about doing practical funny. Jokes to each other and dirty shit to each other. And...
Oh, yeah, there's way, I mean, there's Marilyn Manson will, like, urinate in your beer if you leave the room. And
oh, geez.
At no additional charge.
What kind of scat program is this?
Right. So far, so good.
Yeah. Now, getting back to the book, though, I did like the stories of where we were when you're like in the stories of the when you're in the studio and running into other people.
Yeah,
that was really cool. I loved to hear stuff like that. Just the what it Ozzy called you guys the Spice Boys.
Spice Boys, yeah, the colored hair, and you know the truth is he nailed it because at that time I was way into the Spice Girls. I bought everything they put out, right. Every toy, every lollipop, everything. I bought the pay-per-view, had a party at my house for the pay-per-view concert. So he was dead on it. It's pretty cool, actually, because you feel like you're doing something right when you're in the proximity.
So, Bren, which is your favorite Spice Girl?
I'm going to have to go Sporty.
Really?
Yep. I'm Sporty. I think she is the coolest and the most talented, maybe.
Well, Mel B's got some going on there.
Mm-hmm. Sporty's mine.
Well, there's enough of them to go around, right? How many Spice Girls there are? Five of us on
cool,
here.
Yeah. She put out a cool punk record, kind of a pop punk record, maybe almost even kind of Blink 182-esque after the Spice Girls.
Hmm. The Spice Girls. Yeah, I was a baby Spice. She kind of, I don't know, kind of.
Lucky enough.
Emma.
you're dancing around a landmine.
But somehow the redhead Jerry kind of walked away with the overall. Like, I think if you would have back then asked a random person on the street who's the leader of the Spice Girls,
yeah,
you know, it would have been her. Somehow she kind of took the mantle.
Yeah, isn't Sporty Spice, is she the one that ended up with the soccer player?
Yeah, No. That was Posh.
That's Posh.
No, Posh.
Oh,
man.
Okay.
See, me and Brandon know our Spice Girls.
Yes.
This is the information your viewers tune in for, by the way. They're really excited that you finally got around to talk about the Spice Girls in elaborate
detail. Well, we'll get
some comments about that for sure.
This week, Bryn Ahrens and Spice Girls talk.
Ahrens. Is it Ahrens or is it
Ahrens? Ahrens. I've been told it's Ahrens, but you know.
Yeah, but Ahrens, like I said, half my family go by Ahrens. It makes there more sense. Let's talk about this book.
Yes.
Or not. You know, it's cool. Yeah.
No,
there's
it
a
is.
Cool record store in Minneapolis called Down in the Valley. And it's more than a record store. You know, it's one of those big places that have, it's a head shop, posters, clothing, you know, lots of other stuff. Huge, huge rows and rows and rows of records. And, we've been asked to do a book signing thing.
That's cool.
On, I believe it's what, John? April?
April 9th, I think.
April 9th. And John's flying in from New Jersey. He'll be staying at the Chateau Bryn.
Yep.
And we're going to hang out. It's going to be pretty cool.
So is this the only signing you're going to do?
Down in the Valley, April 9th book signing thing.
Cool.
It's the only book signing we're planning on as a group because everybody doesn't live near each other, really, especially me. But even, you know, some of the band members are hours away. So
Well, right. And states away, like Kilo's basically living in Florida now. Cherry for Kilo is living in Florida, and Cherry's moving to Iowa.
Iowa, wow.
Wow.
Iowa gets that response. It's kind of interesting.
It's like, where wow. you, all these places you can move to. Iowa.
Iowa. Iowa or Nebraska, you kind of say, yeah, moving to Nebraska. People go, yeah, what happened?
Yeah, my son was just in lived in Oklahoma for about 6 months, and it was kind of like that with Oklahoma. It's like, why would you want to go?
We love you, Oklahoma. We love you, Oklahoma.
Yeah, we love Oklahoma. We love everybody from every state. We're good.
Spent quite a bit of time out there in Oklahoma City. We had an office out there years ago, and it's pretty flat.
So I thought the book, you know, getting back to the book. So
There's a book.
There is a book. It's this book. It's called Flip. Yeah. Flip. Yep. Yeah. Thanks for having us, which is awesome. I've listened to some of the music, and we've had you on the show a few times, Bren, stuff like that. But the whole, and you don't know how much of it is just when you're having a conversation with somebody, you don't know how much of it is just stuff that happens through a conversation and how much stuff of it is real. But when you start looking at it in a book and you go back and you look at it and your brother had changed his name twice to something different so that it matched the thing. And then nobody went by their original names. Everybody had a different name, and it didn't change one time. It changed a couple of times, depending on what was going on. It was. So when those things happened, was that all just part of the plan? Looked to me, it was like totally spontaneous. Like it just happened.
It was all happening so fast that we'd be doing a photo shoot one day and Greg would put a banana in his pants and they'd take a picture and we're putting the band together. So we decide we're going to call him Nana Boy. I mean, it's literally completely serendipitous. And believe me, no kind of band meetings were taking place regarding this stuff. It was all just for the hell of it. And then, the only one I really remember really well is Kilo Bale. I was watching an episode of the Jenny Jones Show, and they had one of those distorted voice, blacked out image guys. I was a drug dealer. And underneath it said Kilo, and that was his name. And I was living in New York City at the time, and I called Kilo. We had just done the first batch. And I said, what do you think of the name Kilo? I think that would be really cool. And he goes, what do you think about Bale? And I go, Kilo Bale? And I go, perfect. So, I mean, that's just kind of how it happened. It's fun. You know, I think it says it in the book, and it's, you know, I've said it before, but you've been in a band. You know, after rehearsal, you're sitting around and you're having the proverbial after rehearsal cocktail, and bands will go, wouldn't it be funny if this, or wouldn't it be cool if that, you know, and that's usually as far as it goes. With us, we always took those ifs and followed through on them, you know, and funny things happen. Like, so this isn't a new gig to me. I've been playing music professionally full time since I was literally in the sixth grade. And I don't mean like pretend, I mean like full on. Every grade school, every party, every junior high in my town, every high school, every teen center, every dance, every Sadie Hawkins, I had a point to all this. And now I already lost it trying to remember all the places I played back then. But so this shit, totally brain farting. But this.
You were talking about how I wouldn't just brainstorm ideas, but you do them.
Oh, thank you. So when you play as many shows as I have, backstage, here's where it was going, John. Backstage, you'll get people offering you the craziest shit. Like, hey, man, if you ever need a goat, I got goats. You know, I don't know if you know this, Bryn, man. I love your band. I'm a goat farmer. And one day a guy comes backstage and he goes, God, I fucking love you guys. If you ever need a helicopter, I got, you know, I know a guy with a helicopter. Then another show, I live in Minneapolis. A guy comes where General Mills is located. Goes, hey, if you ever need anything from General Mills, I work there.
There's so, a plan. There's a plan working here.
There's a plan working here. It and it's like, you know, the number dots, and you've got to draw it, and a picture appears. So I connect the dots, and it's like, hey, if I can get this helicopter guy together with this serial guy, and we had just put out a live EP in an actual serial box. I wish I had one here with serial in it and the whole bit. So it worked perfectly. So literally, we got the helicopter guy, got a ton.
There is the cereal box.
Oh, thank you, yeah. John. Got a ton of what we called Flippos, colorful ring cereal, and dropped him from a helicopter on the crowd. And Nightbob, who was running front of house so brilliantly, immediately hooked a mic up to the console and back from the front of house, or it was a big festival, you know, it was probably, I don't know, 12,000, 15,000 people there at this particular one. And Nightbob gets on the microphone and he goes, this is not a police action. The band is giving you new drugs. Throw your old drugs at the stage. And you know, only experience can bring that sort of thing, you know. He was on it like that, just like that. And yeah, so, and that's, so that's, you know, that's kind of where all those things come from. And then you start doing more and more of them, and now the game becomes trying to think of new things to do. So you do one, and all of a sudden it makes a big splash. And the helicopter and the cereal, we did at numerous places. Taste of Chicago, opening up for Cheap Trick, was a really good one, where the pilot was arrested and put in jail. And unbeknownst to any of us, his dad was like the former head judge of Chicago. So they got him off. But to try to come up with things that are entertaining, I mean, you know, ultimately they're kind of extensions of fire breathing or spitting blood. You know, they're flash pots. These gags are no different than anything else, you know what I mean? So it was just really fun to do. And when a band, when you're on the road, 8 hours of the day, you're literally just sitting in a car, right? You're stopping to get gas, and you're like, going, God, should I get another Snickers bar, another Coca-Cola? I'm just so sick of all this crap. And so you start coming up with these ideas, and then we would just do them. And we would pick up things along the way, too, like literally that we would find in dumpsters and stuff. Kind of like, I remember I was really into Alice Cooper and the performance art that Alice Cooper presented in the early, you know, the Love It to Death era, kind of Killers era. A lot of that stuff and props and things that Alice Cooper used were coming out of his hotel room.
Right.
That they picked up on the way to the gig, you know. The first ramps we ever saw a band using in the 1980s, some guy finally figured out the ramps in the rental truck could also be put on stage. You know? So I don't know. I find, and for me too, It's always all been part and parcel. I love the music. I love the poster. I love the name of the band. I love the live show. Not one of these. I love, you know, for lack of a better term, the gimmicks or the extras, whatever you want to call them. And everybody has, every band has one. And the cliche line is, even Leonard Skinner or Bad Company, these bands that chose, I think it's in a Rush lyric, John, maybe you can help me. But if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
A choice, free will.
So, yeah, so to choose to not have an image or to kind of project some sort of thing like that, is this no different than to not do it, really. Kiss isn't any different than Bad Company. You know, one guy's just putting on a flannel shirt and the other guy's putting spikes on, you know. It's still really the same discussion the band has, right? And they come to that conclusion. So for Flip, we just, everything was over the top. Let's just over the top, over the top, over the top.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think I've answered 5 questions that weren't even actually asked.
Good value.
That's a good value. But wait, there's more.
So, John, my question for you, from the time that you and Bryn first started talking until the book went to print, how long did that take?
You know, it was extraordinarily quick. When I write my other travel books,
I love this.
That's my shtick. But when I write those, normally they're based on my memoirs from my travels, and I'll think, oh, there's probably a book in that. It takes me, you know, I'm a school teacher by day, a superhero by night. But you know, if you're doing this in your spare time, it takes about 1.5 years to get a book together. This one, from the moment I decided to contact Bryn till it got published, was like 8 months. Really quick. But it was just pure recreation. It was just fun. My wife Shauna was what I call a author's widow for that time. I'd come home and say, you know, I got a Zoom meet with Cherry Forever at 8, you know, and keep the dog quiet in another room. And you know, every other night I was interviewing somebody Zoom meet, and the following day I'd be typing the transcripts in my spare time. And it came together real, real quick. And I'm really proud of the way the band contributed, in that nobody from Bryn on down, nobody exercised 1 ounce of editorial control on this. And they didn't seek me out. They weren't looking for an author. I came out of the blue. I mean, Flip didn't even tour out east. I found them sort of by accident through watching Three Sides. They were talking about bands that more people should know about. And Tommy Summers mentioned Flip. So I went online and looked for Flip CDs. They were all out of print at the time. They hadn't done their Best of the Worst or any of that stuff. And I listened to one album, and they became my favorite band in one play. And I was listening to them for going on 8 or 9 years. And then I suddenly had this moment where I said, well, let me contact them. So really, they didn't know who I was. They, after talking to me, they individually came to the conclusion that maybe I could do it. And at some point in the progress, I sent the primary band members what I had done so far to read, and they basically liked it, but nobody suggested, oh, take that out or put that in, or talk to this person, but don't talk to that person. You know, oh, you don't want to hear from, you know. No editorial control at all. In fact, none of them really, including Bryn. Bryn didn't see a finished product till it was already printed and we were selling them.
Wow.
And that's complete artistic license, and it's complete trust. And I'd like to think I lived up to that, because to me, it was a labor of love. This is a band I absolutely loved. And every page on it, I was devoted to the idea of what would a fan really like. For example, like one of the features that I decided, like from right out of the gate, that I felt I was going to do was have every single song on the album with their lyrics on one side of the page, and then band commentary about that song or the recording process right next to it. Like that was in my head the moment I decided to do this, because I thought, you know, if my favorite bands like Kiss or Van Halen or Cheap Trick had a book like that, I'd be in heaven. Right. You know, so I was always guided by, you know, I've told the story before. I hope I haven't told the story on this podcast already, but I don't remember. But at some point during our first phone call, Bryn asked me, said, "Why do you want to write this book?" And I immediately said, "Because I want to read it." You know, it was the idea that I thought it was a story that needed to be told. Is nobody's going to do it. I wanted to do it.
That's good.
So, yeah, it was really a joyous process. It flew by. I just had a lot of energy in it, and they had a lot of energy in it. So the conversations were going back and forth all the time, and it came together real quick.
Well, it sounds like it was a late, you know, like a labor of love. You know, it's absolutely something you really love, and you put it out there. And it's funny that you say that because I never heard of Flip, never knew Bryn whatsoever. And same deal. I used to watch Three Sides before we started our podcast. You know, I remember Tommy talking about Flip, kept talking about Flip, and still really didn't know about him. And then we went to Rockin' Pod, and I had known Tom Feely and Roman. And, you know, they're trying to get Bill Coyne into the Hall of Fame. And we're sitting there and Tom's like going, "I got a guy you need to meet. His name's Bryn." And I'm like, so we went over and I started talking to you and meeting you for the first time. I was like, and then I was like, went home and I'm like, I started looking at it. Oh, let's check out this Flip. Let's see what it all is about. And I was like, damn, how did I miss this? You know? Yeah. And,
it's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I assert throughout the book, but it doesn't need me to say it, but for somebody who doesn't already know the band, it sounds like a crazy rock and roll party band. But if you slow down, the lyrics are really interesting. Yeah. Bryn is talking about stuff, but he's not being pompous or pretentious about it. It feels lighthearted and it feels off the cuff, and Bryn may claim that that's what it is, but it's got more depth to it than you expect, but it's not preachy. It's just, it's talking about how people feel about stuff. Right. And that really grabbed me. And plus all of the musicians in this band are real virtuosos. I mean, the bass player, Greg Idom, the drummer, Eric Brettel, these guys are brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
And one thing I do like
Kai's too, and Kai's in there for good luck.
When you're doing, you talk about these songs. Then you've got, like I said, a little column here where, you know, Bryn explains this and does something like that. You know, go in depth. And like I said, this book is very well written.
And I really got to tell you, that to try to recall that stuff was really taxing. Like, I wouldn't have, like, had somebody explain that to me beforehand and said, "Yeah, it's going to be exhausting." I would have went, what? No, digging ditches is exhausting, but it was, but it was also so reaffirming, kind of, if that's the right word, because John kind of knew more stuff than I did. Like, well, not more stuff, but everybody has a unique kind of point of view about any one given thing, right? And John had a very abundant, he just knew a lot. I'm trying to think of the right words, but he just knew so much about what had happened. And being the guy that was doing it every day, you kind of don't notice what you're doing. You're just doing another gig and you're just in another bus or in another van or in another plane and you're on another stage and you're in another hotel room and you kind of don't really notice a lot of what's stuff. You're just doing it, if you know what I mean. And talking to John and having him at a wealth of knowledge, that's the line I was looking for, and such a cool viewpoint on so much of it was like really humbling and super also gratifying at the same time.
You know, I would say part of, go ahead, Bryn, I'm sorry.
Well, just to know that, okay, I did financially pretty well in this business. I mean, that I, and I continued to do. I'm not a rich person, but I'm not a poor person. And I got to do what I decided to do at a time when I had to make a decision if I was going to play baseball in seventh grade, and I was a decent baseball player, or was I going to go to band practice? Because we had to have band practice, of course, after school. And back then you rehearsed at the drummer's house because the house was already acclimated to noise. And quite often I would play this magic trick on people. If you're a drummer, I don't know if I ever played this on you, John, but I don't think it holds true. Does the band rehearse at your house then? Because you're the drummer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are your parents divorced? Yeah, how'd you know that? Well, that means nobody's home during the day and you can play loud music. But what to get back to it, to do this every day for that long and to have somebody like take notice of it to the point where his wealth of knowledge is so great that it's obvious he's been paying a lot of attention to it is cool. You know, to me, that's worth a lot to me.
That is. I mean, and somebody to come to you and, you know, say, I want to do this, and then pull off what he did and make this. That's a hell of a thing. Where did he go?
Well, he's calling right now. Let's see. Okay. Hi, John. We're talking.
It just lost me because I thought my laptop was plugged in, but it wasn't. So I'll be back with you guys in a couple of minutes.
That's fine.
Okay. Did you guys hear that?
Yes, we did.
Now, I'm Polish, so I can say this, but I think this officially makes us a Polish chat room. Okay.
So, Bryn, so why?
You got it, buddy. Bye bye.
So, why John's not here? We can talk about. So, yeah. You have a no. You
I'm kidding.
You just did that guitar. You made that new guitar, the new Coyote.
Oh, is it done? Make it a fan. Are you
right.
Talking?
Yeah, fan.
Right, the one that you were posting on the
yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
it,
right.
Have you been
there.
Playing it some then, or what?
That was so cool. A dude from Chicago named Scott Webb, who I've become really close to too, decided to build me a guitar and send it to me. That's yeah, super cool. I've had numerous guitar endorsement deals over the years,
right?
And have been fortunate enough to get very large record deals with large advances and things.
Sure.
But there's nothing more gratifying than getting free guitars in the mail. There's just something crazy cool about it.
I wouldn't mind. I haven't got one yet, but I'm waiting.
I think you've arrived to some.
Well,
level.
I see you have a nice line of cases behind you.
I got a ton of shit. But the thing is, I bought those.
Yeah, but I mean, well, I did too. Believe me, it was been a lot of work over the last 50 years to get a silly guitar endorsement, and then play it for a week,
right,
and
we'll see,
and then sell it. But so,
I think I froze it.
But there's just, yeah, you did. You're froze. But it's okay. Really gratifying. Free guitars is super gratifying. It there's something is speaking when you get a free guitar in the mail that's worth more than the value of the guitar.
So the one that he sent you, the Coyote, way it looks, how does it play? Does it play good?
Great. Plays great. Sounds great. He took a pickup from something crazy. It's a single coil type pickup. I've never seen it before. It's cool. My real one is right here.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's in the book.
Very first one ever made. And if I'm not mistaken,
got the flesh from the person you
did. Yeah, okay. That story's in there. Because I've told a few stories to people since, and they're like, why wasn't that in the book? And I'm like, God, I can't remember what is and what isn't. so many of them. But yeah, that's the one that hit the woman in the head.
Yeah.
I took her to the hospital, and her and her boyfriend were talking like this. Well, she the whole way to the hospital was talking like this. And I'm like, oh my God, my career is over.
Hell, you get hit with a guitar in the head, you're going to talk like that.
That's what I'm thinking. Kilo's on the phone with Bill O'Coin. Bill O'Coin's no stranger to mishaps and having to take care of people, like flashpots going off in people's faces and burning their hair and shit. So Bill's like, find her boyfriend, get him some beer, give him a free t-shirt, CDs, hang out with him, show him a good time, buy him a hot dog. But, you know, and I got in a golf cart, took her to the hospital, which luckily enough, it was a big festival downtown that we were headlining when Freak was I think was number one in the city at the time. And I still have my makeup on and my silver sparkly suit. I get in a golf cart and I have to drive her only like a half a city block, and we're in the hospital and she's only in there, and they see her right away, which was pretty incredible too. And she's only in there like 15, 20 minutes and comes out and she's still all smiley. And I think she's on whatever kind of drugs is popular with the kids at that time. And she, I go, is everything okay? She goes, yeah, I'm fine. I'm like, oh God, she's not fine. Right. So we get back in the golf cart. I'm at a loss. I don't know what to do. So, okay, get back in the golf cart. And we go back towards the gig, and as we're getting up there by the bus, I see the whole band and a couple other guys that I didn't recognize, obviously her boyfriend and a friend, hanging out with Kilo, and they all got t-shirts over their shoulders and stuff. Kilo had followed Bill's instructions to the letter. When we get up there and we pull up, and she sees her boyfriend, and I'm following her, and she goes, how you doing? And her boyfriend goes, I'm cool. How are you doing? And her boyfriend starts talking, and that's when I realized that's how they fucking talk. It's not because she got hit in the head.
No brain damage, just normal.
Like something, or you know, they were on that whatever form of ecstasy or whatever the kids were taking at that time. Special K.
I would say the brain damage came before the hit to the head.
I would guess. I might have even helped. For all we know, we knocked a few things back. It's just as possible.
You woke her ass up, what you did. Yes.
But that's the guitar that did it. And this is the very first one. This was designed by a very famous guitar technician named Alan Rogan, who worked for George Harrison, Angus Young, Keith Richards, Pete Townsend, and a couple others. He designed this guitar with Billy Gibbons. And if you ever look on the back of a ZZ Top album, you notice there's a silhouette of a coyote howling in the moon. Right. That's the head of that coyote. This being the eye. This being the mouth. Right. Oh. And the famous vintage guitar shop in St. Paul, Minnesota, called Pete's Guitar, in the early 80s, was one of the first places to actually get involved, kind of before vintage guitars were known as vintage guitars. There really wasn't a collectible market. They were just old guitars, you know. But he was one of the first guys that started doing that, and he ended up with, like, George Harrison's whole collection, including that psychedelic painted Stratocaster. He had all of them. And one day I went into the shop, and he was just a guy who, for some reason, had some level of confidence in my abilities, and he gave me that.
Wow.
And I still have it. And I was literally recording it today on a new song I wrote called Kiss Me Goodnight. Kiss me goodnight, slow and easy. If this is goodbye, before you leave me, kiss me goodnight.
So is this new? Is this new? Is this new flip?
Good lyrics.
Is this new new flip material?
I have a lot of it. I wish I could play it for you. Debbie's got a brand new boyfriend. Debbie's got the one that got away. Whiskey me away. Leave it all behind. Drown my troubles. So make it a double. Whiskey me away.
Bill's eyes lit up. He's like, I like that song.
I need that song. Can you send that to me?
You can relate to that song.
I might have a couple of bottles of bourbon
that
over there.
That just went to Nashville. I manage an artist when I was in Nashville doing the pod thing. The reason I was there during the pod thing was because I was working with Brock Gagne, who I got signed to Big Machine Records out there. Hmm. Nice. So I do songwriting and other things for Big Machine. And that just went out to them by request, Whiskey Me Away, as long as another new song I've written recently called Goddamn Dog. I love my goddamn dog. He's dancing on my leg. He's sniffing up my butt. He's hogging up the bed. He's eating all my food. He's sitting in my chair. Now get into the truck. We're going for a ride. Then I'll let you outside so you can run, Duke, run. I love my goddamn dog. Yeah, he's my goddamn dog. And then a couple months ago, I just finished writing a new song. So the directive I got from Nashville was write a song about dogs, trucks, and whiskey. Literally, that was the directive.
And your mama. And
I wasn't.
Mom.
No, there wasn't. There was no like.
No mom. No.
Can you write a song about making out with your relatives? There was nothing like that in there. Although I did write one. I couldn't help myself.
Of course.
And,
I think they've already called it. It's like what, I'm my own grandpa. Is that what that one song is?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, shit. There he is.
Hey, John's back. Well, it's nice to see you. Nope.
Welcome back, John.
he's getting his audio. Hold on. It's connecting his audio.
So then amongst those songs, I'll just finish this story about these songwriting. So yeah, this I'm kind of like hyper about it because in this last month, I've just been really hankering down. And I have just been offered a solo deal that I'm contemplating. But most of this newer material I've been writing isn't necessarily what people might expect. Anybody who's bought in any of our other records. So, I mean, I don't want to put like Goddamn sure. Dog and Whiskey Me Away on one of my records, because it just wouldn't make sense, you know.
Right.
But another song I wrote, so out of that trifecta trucks, I wrote a song called All Trucked Up, and Brian Setzer picked it up, and now he's performing it live.
Cool.
And it's getting all trucked up, gonna have some fun, I got the dog in the back, gonna hit and run, now rev your engines up. We're getting all trucked up, to pump and tongue, getting all trucked up with nowhere to go. Gonna find myself down in Mexico and get all trucked up. Yeah, we're getting all trucked up.
That sounds like a country song too, Brent.
It is.
That could very definitely be there.
You are right. And Brian, it's very rockabilly. He's good, you know, gotta have some fun. I got the dog in the back, and it's really cool. And he sent me a demo of him doing it just with him and a little guitar and an amp in his living room of his first pass at it.
Wow.
And I have a couple like Elvis giggles and they're like, you know, getting all trucked up kind of, and he put all that in there and that was really cool too.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I've just been really hankering really lately, just writing. It's, this new song, Kiss Me Goodnight, I'm on the fourth take of it. It's already at its third key change, second tempo change.
You'll get it.
And I think it still needs to be faster because I write the instrumental And then I come up with lyrics and things after the fact. Now, I teach a songwriting course online and otherwise with people all over the world. But one of the things that happens when you're songwriting, and I hope this isn't too far off track or too deep or too whatever, but words have built-in melody and rhythm inherently already in them. John, as a writer, knows that. There's a meter. You could call it a meter when it comes to language, which is the equivalent of melody and rhythm. For instance, and we'll quote Gene Simmons, the word gymnasium is rhythmically much different than the word snow. So when you write music, the idea that you can take a pre-existing lyric and plug it into any piece of music and make it work, it just ain't going to happen. So you almost always kind of end up massaging and finishing the lyrical content after the fact. And in and of this last song I've been working on, as I finally have now come around to what the lyrical content, melody, what it's asking the melody to be and the lyrics to be, it's telling me it needs to be faster again because it's singing just a little too slow and it wants to be pumped up a little bit.
You know, they can do anything. I mean, Toto got the word Serengeti in that song, and I still don't know how the hell they did that. It works.
Is that in Africa? What a great song.
Yes, it's like, how the hell do they work that in?
And it fits. I love that song.
All right, John, good to have you back.
Yeah, anything happen while I was away, or did Bryn just talk a lot?
Bryn didn't talk anything. He didn't. He went to a break.
He took a break.
He sat there and waited. That's nice. Yeah. I appreciate it.
It was very uncomfortable. It was very.
That's generally the experience I have with him too. But you know,
anything he said about you while you were gone, we have nothing to do with. So anyway, we'll go from there. Anyway.
Okay, John. Right, so now, John, now that you're back, I was also going to ask. When you were writing the book, did you have any difficulties with, obviously you had no difficulties with the band. Did you have any difficulties with the publishers or the printers or anything like that?
Well, you know, this is entirely self-published. I did the whole book on my computer in Microsoft Word, whole thing beginning to end. And I already had experience because the other books that I have had some experience writing and putting out there. I didn't give that. I'm
just
salute.
Doing
my,
no, I'm just doing it. No, Bryn was doing that earlier. I'm just helping with.
Oh no,
Bryn
no, earlier. See, no, no. I would never do something as crass as that on screen. My other travel memoir books are all self published, and they're just, you know, they're Amazon Kindle, and you know they sell whatever they sell. But the thing is, in a previous life, before I was a teacher, I spent 8 years. In a management training company as a word processor back in the day when a lot of college educated technical writers didn't know how to type on a keyboard. And So 8 years of my life as a line editor and actually physically constructing the manuals software wise in terms of headers and footers and getting the right look and putting the images where you want them and all that. So I had a lot of experience doing that. And then when I started writing my memoirs, that was just adding my own narrative to the skill set I had. And then I published two technical manuals about tropical dragonflies, which is my area of expertise. One about dragonflies of South Pacific, 600 species in a 5-pound hardcover book. And then another one about Caribbean dragonflies, and again, all self-published. So when I decided to do this one, I had that skill set already. And even though completely self-publishing can be a dodgy way to go, to actually sell a project to one of the big companies, Simon & Schuster or whoever, it's every bit as challenging as a garage band trying to get a record contract. Every bit as challenging. But for a project like this book, for the flip book, you've got a well-defined audience that's still out there that craves this title. And I knew I had a skill set to, if I say so myself, make it look good. And I had the editorial skills to know that it wasn't going to be full of stupid goofs and incorrect grammar and all that stuff. I kind of like to think that if this book falls into the hands of somebody in the actual publishing industry, if they turn around and say, who edited this for you? I'll be glad to say, you know what? I did it all myself. not that Random House or Simon & Schuster is going to take a project like that and just take my word for it, but they would know that I wouldn't be a lot of extra work. Like I'd be giving them something they could work with right out of the gate instead of, you can imagine when a lot of people who've made their fame as an actor or a musician, when they're contracted to do a biography, they know they're going to have a lot of editorial work to do because these people are not writers. They're going to need to get somebody hold their hand through this thing. So anyway, and to long answer to the short question, we didn't have any problem with publishing because I was the publisher basically. And I hired the same book factory in Landisville, PA that did my technical manuals and already had a relationship with them. So I could actually say, let me send you some pictures. Let me send you some pages. Let me send you the cover art. Can you show me what it would look like if you did it on 80-pound stock? Should it be on white or cream? Should it be like I had that technical background already.
That's cool.
And this copy that I've been holding was an author's proof. And the inside jackets are not what people are buying. The printer suggested that they could add a fold in on each cover, which is where I have the author's bio and some extra quotes on right. the book. And it also makes it a little more solid to hold. So yeah. it was really kind of cool to be completely in the driver's seat, to put all the pictures where I wanted them, to put the typeface as big as I wanted it, to, you know, it full control. Now, we couldn't manage a book that had a potential to sell millions this way, but, you know, hundreds or, you know, God willing, a couple thousand, we could do it. And that's so cool. it was a pleasure because, again, artistic control, really, really gratifying.
Well, and what's kind of just struck me, which kind of is interesting, we were talking earlier about after band rehearsal, the band getting together and going, what if and why not? Which is exact. And then we would do it ourselves, which is exactly what you did, John.
Yep.
You went, what if and why not?
Yep. Well, I've told the story to other people many times is when I first texted Bryn on his Facebook page and said, I want to write the book. And then he responded and we started working on it. And a couple of weeks into it, I mentioned to my wife, you know, I don't know whether this is going to take off or not. And she said, well, you had no real expectation that Bryn was going to answer you. And he did. So why not? You know, and it's that let's do it. And as we actually went into production, Bryn and his partner in Rocksteady, Grant Lindberg, and I were talking about how many copies should we print. And I was the guy who kept saying, print more than you're talking about because people are going to buy them. And Bryn was like, oh, I don't know. I said, I think I do. I think I do. You know, if I'm this much of a Flip fan and I grew up in New Jersey and never heard of Flip till I was 53 years old, I think, you know, the people who grew up in the Minneapolis area and were there for Obsession and Funhouse and Flip, I'm hoping they're going to like it. I as you said, Dennis, it really was a labor of love. It was a lot of fun. Yeah. And I really hope that comes through in the book.
And it does. It really does. Like I said, I love the way, maybe because you've written these other books that are more technical and everything, the way you've placed it and put it out. And it's kind of almost like a living history of the band. And it, like you said, it's not a boring read because it changes as you go through. It's just like, what's next? Well, this is kind of cool. And then you go to the next thing. It's a very, very fun read. It is fun.
I appreciate it. And, you know, the subtitle of it, the subtitle, the story behind the little band that almost could. That's the story that I saw that I was kind of pitching to Bryn. I said, you guys climbed the mountain and almost got to the top. And then your record company basically went away. And then you got another contract and you climbed almost the top. And they changed presidents and then they dropped all the acts. Boom. And then you climbed almost to the top. And then Napster came out and everybody went broke. Boom. And, you know, but they never stopped because right. This is what they do. This is what they do. Because
he's fucking Bryn Arns. That's why it is.
And everybody else associated with it. And when Bryn or anybody else associated with that gang says, hey, do you want to get together and do a thing? The answer is always yes. When? You know?
Yes.
And it was just so gratifying, so much fun. And haven't had a chance to quite say this yet. I really honestly made four new friends in writing this book. I got these guys that email me and text me and call me randomly, and the project's done. And they call and say, "So what you doing?" "Oh, going to roast some marshmallows." "Cool." You know, like, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody when I come out in April for the book signing, because I last met them 2 years ago when they were touring Too Dumb to Quit, and they were doing opening for Ace Frehley. And they managed to play a show in Pennsylvania, which was 2 hours drive for me, but it's the closest I was ever going to get to seeing them. And I met him and hung out with him, and I had not even thought about the book yet. It hadn't occurred to me yet.
Wow.
So we all met each other. We all remember each other because we've seen each other in the Zoom meets. So when I see him again, I feel like we're all going to be brothers in arms. We know each other so much better now. And there's a real bond of trust amongst each other. They trusted me with the project, and I didn't even need their trust. I didn't need to trust them, because everybody was so open and candid. And like I said, there was no editorial control. Nobody said, "Please don't put that in." And nobody said, "Oh, you don't want to talk to that guy." It was just, "Hey, maybe you should call this guy. Maybe you should call that guy." Or I'd get an email and somebody would say, "I was just talking to Cherry and he said I should call you." And all of a sudden, you know, I interviewed Bryn's dad. People said, "Have you talked to Bob Ahrens?" And I was like, "Should I?" They go, "Oh, you got to talk to Bob Ahrens." So I did that too.
That's awesome.
I will say preemptively, there's almost certainly going to be a couple people who have been in the flip picture that will feel like they never got their chance to be in this. But it wasn't out of anybody's choice of excluding them or anything. I was following the leads wherever they took me. And at some point, you do feel like you've got the story now. I've got the narrative. And I don't want to belittle anybody's association with the band, but at some point,
well, I've read. It's kind of like genealogy in a way. At some point, you got to stop, because it can go on forever.
Yeah. If the book has to be done at some point, and I've read some of the books written by other people who basically are in the position I am. And I've really enjoyed the self-published books, rock and roll narrative books, and I've really enjoyed them. But some of them have a separate chapter for the guy who designed the gloves they were wearing on the album cover. And I appreciate their diligence with that, but I do flip right past a bunch of those chapters. You know, I don't need to know who designed the lighting for the photo shoot for the inner sleeve of the something. And that's okay. They did it. They followed that lead all the way there, and good for them. But I skip a lot of that stuff. And so there was a point where I just said, maybe I don't need to talk to everybody who was on the bus every time. But it wasn't meant to belittle anybody's role. And I know that we're going to hear from somebody sooner or later says, "Why didn't you interview me?" But it wasn't because there was any volitional choice to not interview anybody. I think it's just unavoidable problem. You know?
So John, where can the people pick up the book?
Ah, okay. It's right now it's being sold online through Rocksteady Bandcamp. You order it online. For the book signing that's coming up, the record store down in the valley is going to be setting up an online purchase. If people want to attend what we believe is going to be a reunion performance at the record store and book signing, they should buy the book online, because that's the way these kind of things are set up. If they've already bought the book and want to get it signed, they probably have to buy another one at the book signing to do it. So maybe get one signed for your pal. But that's where it is now. I think as time goes by, we'll probably make it available elsewhere. But right now, exclusively through Rocksteady. And then they should look online for the book signing event coming up, and they'll see you know, stuff set up online about Down in the Valley's arrangement.
Do you know the website for that?
The record store hasn't actually got that up now. It should be coming up any day. But at Bryn Ahrens Facebook page, and also another really active Facebook page called Bring Back Flip, we will be posting all the updates so people know where to get it from there.
That or perfect. John or Brent, if you wanted to send it to us too, we can put it on our page also.
Well and frankly, if anybody just Googles Flip, thanks for having us, I'm sure that'll come up with information right there too.
We'll help spread it.
Flip,
that'd be excellent. P's. Thank you so much.
All right, folks, Flip with two P's. And on that note, visit agesofrock.com. Check out our past episodes and social media links. And until next time, peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.